College of Judaism.
And welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our College of Judaism, Aleph Bet, continuing into the energy structure of the Aleph Bet. Tonight we are dealing with the subject or the letter Tzadi, T-Z-A-D-I. And this is the fifth letter from the end. And it was not really the fifth letter which appeared before God, because as we said a moment ago, or the last time, the two letters Kuf and Resh didn't even bother to go to God. They were so, you know, bad, right? So the Tzadi comes before God, this little letter in front of you, and he says, Ribon Ho'olam, O Master of the Universe, Tov Lecha Livrobi Et Ho'olam, it would be good for you. You see the way he speaks? He doesn't want anything for himself. He says to God, it would be good for you, it would be best if you created the world with me, with my energy structure. Shibi Chatumim Tzadikim, because within me is the name of righteousness. A tzadik in Hebrew is a righteous person. Okay? What makes a person a tzadik? What makes a person a righteous person? A tzadik is one who is exposed to the dark side, but who was exposed to the desire to receive for oneself alone, but refused to surrender to it. Remember, negativity in Kabbalah is a desire to receive for oneself alone. Our job in this world is to transform our desire to receive for ourselves alone to one of sharing. Understood? Does that make sense? So he's the one who was able to transform his desire to receive to one of sharing. And that's why in our Bible, Joseph is referred to as Joseph HaTzadik, Joseph the righteous person. Why? Because he was able to withstand the advances of whom? Potiphar's wife. Remember the story in the Bible? All you wonderful Christians, do you understand the story in the Bible? Huh? You don't remember that story. Anything that has any sort of life and passion to it, you have nothing to do with. Joseph's boss, his master, Potiphar, had a wife who was a voluptuous woman and seductive woman, and she wanted to have an affair with Joseph, and he withstood her advances. So that's why he was called a righteous person. Read your Bible. It's the most passionate X-rated book in the world. You just got to know how to read it and where to look for it. You will notice that his desire to receive for self alone didn't exist. And although it exists very slightly here, in reality it didn't exist for practical purposes. Because we know that it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, which of course you never read either. Okay. Oh, the name of the book, right. It says, Ein tzadik ba'olam shelo yechta. There is not a righteous person in the world who has not sinned, who does only good. Because there must be an aspect of a desire to receive for oneself alone within everybody. That's basically, we're born with that. And that we learned in our courses up until now, in Kabbalah 1, and in Kabbalah 2, and then in meditation, and in astrology, and all the courses we've taken up until now, because next year is the end of all the courses I have, which is with the Zohar. Then we have to do something else. But basically everybody is born with a desire to receive for himself. The first thing we do is breathe in. We receive. Because there must be an aspect of a desire to receive for oneself alone within everybody. However, generally speaking, a tzaddik, a righteous person, is one who is most of the time has the power to resist this desire to receive for oneself alone. And there are many, many expressions about a tzaddik, a righteous person. There's a rabbinic statement that says, Tzadik ozer v'hakodesh baruch hu mekayim. A righteous person decrees, and the Holy One, blessed be He, will fulfill that decree. Remember the famous story of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai that we studied a few years ago. He comes outside and he sees that the sun has darkened, and there's an angel who desires to destroy the sun and the universe. So he says to the angel, you go tell the one who sent you that you can't destroy the universe because I'm here. And a whole argument ensues, and this Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai begins to curse him and threaten him and says, if you don't leave, I'm going to destroy you. So the angel leaves, and then a voice descends from heaven and says, a righteous makes the decree and God upholds it. It's an idea, you must understand, at this period of time, the rabbis, we were in the midst of rabbinic Judaism, and as I've mentioned many times, we are not Bible Jews, we are rabbinic Jews. And so this is one way of saying the rabbis are in control. And this seems very, very weird to many religious people. After all, if God wants to do something, he can do it. Who's going to stop him? Nobody can stay in his way. But it's God's will. But is it really God's will to destroy the world? Does God really want to make people miserable? If this is God's desire, is it really, you know, I mean, I don't think any religion will come out with that concept that it's his will. But that's the power of a tzaddik. In other words, what you are trying to say, or what tradition is trying to say, is that the tzaddik, a righteous person has power. If his consciousness is a desire to receive in order to share, then every desire he has is a legitimate desire. And this means that it's not for himself alone. And we know that when a desire is to share, then what you want to happen will happen. Why? Because of the power of the tzaddik. That's basically what Kabbalah really is saying, that the consciousness is in control. Your consciousness can control your life. If a person comes with a great deal of klipot, what is klipot? Anybody remember? What? Veils. It's the coverings, that which blocks out the light, meaning God, that he will receive what he wants with a great deal of klipot. But because a tzaddik is a person who has almost no klipot, he has no veils, he has done away with those things that block out the light. For him, his desire is clear. He has a great deal of power over the universe. And that's why, according to Kabbalah, or according to the Zohar, that book of Kabbalah, the arch-type book, the great book of Kabbalah, that's why Moses could split the Red Sea. And that's how Rabbi Shimon changed the course of history. It's hard for us modern people to understand this. I don't really understand what they mean when they say that. Do they mean that literally? Do they mean that figuratively? Do they mean that spiritually? But that's how many people who had this power were able to change their destiny and the destiny of other people and the destiny of the world. All right, so that's one idea. Tzadik ozer, v'akodesh baruch hu mekayim. The tzadik decrees and the Holy One upholds his decree. There's another expression about a tzadik, about a righteous person, and that is tzadik yesod ha'olam. A tzadik is the foundation of the world. He's connected to sfirat yesod. Now, you people don't know what I'm talking about, but there are ten... they do have it there. Okay, so... You see, these are the 10 sphirot. God is up here, and this is the first emanation of God, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, sixth, eight, ninth, tenth. This is Yesod, this one here. So he says that tzaddik is the foundation of the world, or he's connected to this sphirah, this emanation of God's life. But you'll see, it's the foundation of everything. You'll also see, if you turn it around, the Genesis. And Joseph is referred to tzaddik. Why? Because that's where he showed his righteousness. Did you get it, or did I lose you?
The circumcision? Well, is a Potiphar's wife, so yeah.
No, he was able to withstand Potiphar's...
Joseph, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Joseph, yeah.
My bad. I went back to Abraham.
So a tzaddik is one who is connected to that level of energy. What is Yesod? Yesod is the sphira that accumulates all the light of that which was on top of it and gives it to that which is behind it, below it. So it will collect all the light and then transfer it to physicality. The one on the bottom, Malchut, you'll notice that things get lighter as they get down, or they don't, just me.
Yeah, they do. When you get here, it's Malchut, which is very interesting because that describes physicality. And physicality is that which has no light. This world has no light of its own. Right? We have to create the light. And we can only create, when you look out in space and you see Earth, when you see Earth, what are you seeing? A reflection of the sun on the Earth. So that's the Earth is sharing of itself, and that's how you see it. And the Jewish people are supposed to be a light unto the nations. How do you become a light unto the nations is by, or how do you become a light to anyone, or how do you become a light is by reflecting off, receiving, but sharing that which you have received. Okay? There's another legend about the Lamed Vavniks. The Lamed Vavniks, Lamed Vav in Hebrew is two Hebrew letters. Lamed is 30. A numerical value of 30, and Vav has a numerical value of 6. So together it's how much? 36. By virtue, there are 36 people by whose virtue of their existence this world survives. That's the power of the tzaddik. In other words, there are 36 people who can affect the entire quantum, the whole universe. And the whole universe depends upon them, and at times they're not even aware, most of the time, if not all the time, they're not even aware that they're one of the 36. There's 36 in any given time. Yeah. There's the story of the story of the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov was the founder of the Hasidic movement. If I lose anybody, stop me and I'll explain what I'm talking about, okay? I'm looking straight at you. So if I lose you, if I lose you, you lose me. Stop me. Because do you know what the Hasidic movement is? So stop me. The The Hasidic movement is that group of people who were mystical, who decided that emotion was more important than celebration was more important than cerebration, and they were grassroots people. They weren't really from the elite, but they were very pious, very righteous in their original form. And the founder of that movement was the Baal Shem Tov, which is called the Master of the Holy Name. So the idea was that he knew the secret name of God. Okay, so. And there's a story about his grandson, who was Rabbi Aaron, and he lived in Constantine. And he was the type of person who appeared very, very humble. He never spoke with people. He was always quiet. He was always sitting on the side. He never wanted to disturb anybody. And he was being criticized by everybody because everybody knew that, you know, that he had such, you know, what they would say, look at this guy, he's got such a big ego that he doesn't even want to talk to anybody. But in truth, he was very humble. He didn't want to, you know, he didn't want to push himself. And finally, they went to the great tzaddik of the generation, of that generation, which was called, he was called the Magid of Mezrich. Mezrich was a city. Magid means one who tells or who speaks. And they came to listen to him give a speech. But the first thing they did was to tell the Magid about Rabbi Aaron and his arrogance. So the Magid said, do you see him? This person is a very high soul. I want you to know. He's very special. He's not so arrogant. And he's filled with humility. And you people have to respect him for who he is. In those days, Jews listened to their rabbis, you see. So on the way back, they were so upset over that which they had done, they wanted to respect him. And so they gave him the best seat on the wagon, right? Taking him back. But he went as usual to the last seat. So you see, the ego has to do its part. So they were going to try to make Rabbi Aaron have an ego as well. So they played a trick on him. And they decided that when they come out, they would all run to all the seats, and the only seat left would be the best seat on the wagon, and then Rabbi Aaron would have the best seat. And he would have no other choice, but he would have to go and sit in that seat. So while sitting in this seat of honor, he began to cry and begged God to make him forget what the Magid told them. Make those people forget what that guy told them, what the rabbi told them, that he was such a high soul. And he prayed so much that they all forgot. Okay? So as they returned, they began abusing him as before. In the meantime, he continued to study and he had no money. Eventually, he had no rent to pay for his place. And so he had to leave his house. He became homeless. Nobody even noticed him. He found a shack on the outskirts of town, moved with his family over there, and that's how he lived.
But one day his wife was about to give birth, and the midwife came to the hut, and when she noticed how they were living, she was appalled. She went back to the synagogue and said to the people, "Are you crazy? Do you know what you're doing? There's this great tzaddik living at the end of town." And then they remembered what the Magid had told them, and they collected a great deal of money, and they gave him a great deal of respect, and they gave him a great deal of money too, because, you know, don't give me respect, I got to eat. And, well, after everyone left, he went up to the ark and began to cry again and begged God to make everyone forget the whole thing. However, there was this old man that was warming himself behind that big oven, belly pot oven. He not only heard what he prayed, but he also noticed that once again, everybody forgot. Now, it so happened that there was a plague in the nearby town, and the people began dying off like flies. It's a great convoluted story, right? And they came to Constantine, and they needed some tzaddik to go and bless that other city, pray for that city. Perhaps the plague would stop. And the old man, again warming himself at that oven, came out and said, "You need not go too far. We've got a Rabbi Aaron, and whatever he prays for, that's exactly what happens. He prays and it's accepted immediately, so just do it with him. He's the Baal Shem Tov's, the master of the great names, grandson." So they tried everything to persuade him to go, but he refused, so they tricked him again. And forcefully they brought him to the other town, and miraculously, the plague ceased. Now, this occurred on a night right before the Sabbath. But the rabbi made a deal with the wagon driver that as soon as he gets to town, to return him home. So he left. So all the people of the town took all their wagons and went after him to spend the Sabbath with him in Constantine. And they stayed there until they forced him to be their rabbi, and he became their rabbi. And because he did not pray for it and did not want it and didn't ask for it, you got it. Well, that's a long story. But the point of that story is the power of the tzaddik, the power of a righteous person. This was believed very, very strongly throughout our tradition. To this day, people will go to a rabbi and ask them to make a prayer for them. You know? And sometimes... Yeah. So, you know, the tradition would say he can go to a town and stop a plague like this. When he prays, they are answered. Most people who are tzaddikim are not known to be tzaddikim. He has the power to connect to the light that wherever he is, there are no klipot, there are no veils. Okay. Give you a little background of what this letter represents, you see. The sign of a tzaddik is one who only helps others. He worries very little about himself, but only thinks of others. Sure, he worries about himself, but only to the least degree. His main concern is to help others. And as long as the person does not concern himself about others, he never will be a tzaddik. He can be the smartest guy in the world, but he's not going to be a righteous person. The real way to connect to the light is not only intellectually, but through helping others. So this letter, tzaddik, now, this beloved letter, says, "This world cannot exist without me. This world should be created with me. I'm so powerful that whenever I am in the darkness disappears." And then, am I not the correct letter, O Lord, to create the universe with me? With me, the light force can win. Even God refers to him as a tzaddik. So it says in the Zohar, "Amar la tzaddi, tzaddi at v'tzaddikata aval al tetzarech lihiyot nisteret." God said, "You are a tzaddik, but you know what? You got to remain hidden. Ein at tzricha lihitgalot kol kach. You cannot be revealed to the extent that the world would be created with you." It seems here that God is using the tzaddik as a secret weapon, pulling him out of his proverbial pocket at the last moment. He'll use him to save the day if he needs to. And it goes on to say, and what's the reason that he has to be hidden? Is because, aha, the tzaddik is made up of two Hebrew letters, like this. What letter is it? No, it's a nun. You got the letters there in front of you. What letter is it?
The Hebrew.
Take out that little thing on the right. You just got the left part.
A wing on
oh, no, take out the thing on the left. It's got this right part, right? You see a letter that looks like that?
It looks like one of the letters, but from perspective view, if you're looking at it, this.
It's a shame I haven't got my blackboard today. Oh, what?
Oh, I didn't see.
Oh.
Let
me show you. Connected, look, with this letter. And what's this letter? This little here? A yud, but it's not a yud. It's a yud backwards. Because the yud would have this on this side and this little thing sticking out.
It's a doi.
It's a doi. Yeah, it's a doi, it's not a yud, right? It's backwards. So he says, how do you write a tzaddik? What is its structure? It's made of a nun and a yud. So you see here a backward yud and squashed down nun. So it looks like the yud is sitting on the back of the nun and the nun is lowering its head. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
So first let's ask, what is the nun and yud doing together? Because the yud symbolizes the energy of the male. It's the first letter of the Yud K Vav K, the four-lettered word of God, which we don't know what I'm talking about, but there is a four Hebrew-lettered word of God called the Tetragrammaton. And that means whenever the Lord, whenever in the Bible it says the Lord and not God, that's what they're talking about. Yud, but Yud also means power, it means light, energy force. That's what the Yud represents. It is both Keter and Chochmah. Keter and Chochmah, the two first emanations of the Sfirot. So Yud is all that energy. Top, it's 90% and 80% of all that. Keter is 90 and 80% of all God's light, right? A lot of energy. And the Nun is the female. And it comes from the word Nefilah, which means falling. But the nun here is like lowering its ego, you see, because it stands here, but you see the way it's written here, it's lowering its ego, because it is lowering its head. So this is not a straight nun, but a humble nun. And when you look at this letter, you see the male and the female together. They're meshed together. Now we learned in the beginning of creation, in Kabbalah 101, first lesson you ever took, Zachar unekeva bara otam. When you read the story of creation, the first creation story, it says, male and female created he them. When Adam was created, that is the verse that was used. What does that mean? Male and female created he them. First man was a hermaphrodite. Did you ever hear that? He had both male and female. Couldn't handle it. It was tough hugging yourself. You didn't get too much satisfaction out of this autoeroticism or self-eroticism. Doesn't work. So what God does in the second story is he splits him down the middle, right? And from one side is Adam and from the other side is Eve. You got that? So when we learn that when Adam was created, he was the secret of those emanations. Yeah. The secret of this part. This. Because when Adam was created, remember, Adam is living in a spiritual world, not living in this physical world. The first creation story is the spiritual creation story. Then comes the Big Bang, and then you get the physical creation story in the chapter 2. According to Kabbalah. You know what I'm talking about, Amy, right? You still remember this?
It sounds familiar.
Okay. So God created Adam originally with two systems. He created one of male, the other of female, both connected each other back to back. I ain't going to get too much close this way. You're not going to be able to do too much this way, right? Siamese backwards. Can't even talk to each other. You know, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm fine, you know. I love you. Yeah, sure. Why don't you turn around and tell me, you know? You ever try to talk somebody with your back?
Hey, I want to tell you something, Leanne. So nice having you here, right?
I'm really relating to you that way, aren't I, right? Well, it's very difficult. And Mishum Zeh, says the Zohar, and that's why the Yud looks backwards and the Nun looks forwards. One's going this way, one's going this way. They're back to back, and that's how they write, that's how you write a Tzadi according to this script. But there's another system where they could be placed face to face. But we should know, when we say back to back, we're talking about a very powerful aspect. What does back to back mean? When we say something like this, we get the feeling of, when I spoke to you a moment ago, did you feel the warmth I was exuding towards you? No, you felt coldness, right? He turned his back on me. No communication, no connection, animosity. So now we know that in the beginning, the bread of shame had not been corrected. What is the bread of shame? As a review, in the endless world, before the physical world was created, there was God was sharing his light, and the vessel, which is everything else, was receiving the light until the vessel finally said to the light, stop, enough. I can't continue to receive your light without earning it. So what did the light do? And that's called the Big Bang, from a Kabbalistic perspective. And the Ein Sof, that's when they were in the Ein Sof, in the endless world. Yeah, and there was a power of negativity, and the power of Klipa is too strong. And so in order to prevent the veils to holding on to the Zeir Anpin, those six sfirot there, to holding on to the powerful force of Adam, they placed the tzadi with their faces facing outward so that the klipa could not grab hold on it. But the Zohar says that God said that I will separate you so that you can be face to face. So after the tikkun, after the correction of the world, or the correction of one's soul, the tzadi will be written differently, face to face. And I'd show it to you. Not easy to write, but I would show you how it would be done if I had a blackboard here. But just understand them turning around the other way.
That would only be if the soul has achieved its
right. Correction. Or the world, basically.
The world.
Yeah.
So.
Or it could be written face to back or back to face. This has to do with the level of connections. When it's face to face, we're then talking about total communication between the male and the female aspect of Zeir Anpin. And at that moment, space for the Satan to enter is there. Is not there. Once you do that, there's no possibility for satanic consciousness to enter. There's no space because there's no separation. The light is overflowing and there's no separation. That's what we call tikkun. Tikkun means correction. We're here to correct our souls individually, and communally we're here to repair the world, which is called Tikkun Olam. So we're told that when Adam and Eve were created, they were Siamese twins, and they were separated so that they could be face to face. And so in the future, says the Holy One, blessed be He, to this letter, I will cut you to separate your back-to-back connection so that you can become face to face. Because when two speak to each other face to face, when you can look into each other's eyes, there is a connection. It's a union. However, that will happen in another place and in another time, not immediately and not at the beginning of creation. Because when the tzaddik is face to face, we are then at the end of the tikkun process, of the correction process. We need somebody to start the tikkun process. The tzaddik is too strong for that. The tzaddik is a weapon that is just too strong. It's like using an atom bomb to open up your locker. You're using an improper tool. We need the proper tool in order to begin the process. Therefore, you need to be concealed and to be structured back to back so that it will show you to be concealed. Therefore, it would not be proper to create the world with you. So the letter Tzaddik is the letter of which sign? Now, those of us who took astrology, what is the sign of the letter? What sign does the letter Tzaddik go with? What I like about Amy is she's got every note I ever wrote. Huh, who said that? How did you know? Oh, she's looked there. It's Aquarius, right. Aquarius is the sign of what? This is the age of Aquarius, right? What is that? It's what kind of consciousness? Mashiach consciousness, Messiah consciousness. We're in an age of Aquarius, the age of enlightenment. This is the time when the tzaddik will reveal himself. It's the time for the secrets of the tzaddik to be revealed. It's the time for all the power of the tzaddik to be revealed. And this is the time when everyone will be able to reveal the power of the tzaddik which resides within him, because within each and every one of us there is righteousness. And that's why we were told that throughout the generations it was the tzaddik who was doing the corrections for everyone else. And there are people today, to this very day, who are tzaddikim, righteous people, who do their life not for themselves but for the community in which they live. There's something I do when I make an Eruv Tavshilin. You know, when a holiday falls next to a Sabbath, you're allowed to cook from one meal to the next, but you're not allowed to cook for the future. So on Friday, you can't cook for Saturday. So if you didn't have enough food, how are you going to eat? So there's a legal fiction we go through, and we put away a meal, and we designate it for the Sabbath. So now we can cook whatever we want because it's not for the Sabbath. We got the meal. And in the prayer that I say, or that is prescribed to be said, it's not only for me, but for all the homes in the community. You see, so that's the idea. It continues on. So when this knowledge is supposed to be revealed to the public, that's supposedly why we study Kabbalah. We teach the meditations, we teach the Anava Koach, which is, I think you got a piece of paper there with all the, yeah, you found it in there, the Anava Koach is right there. Leanne, that page over there, well, that's right, that's one, that's the Anava Koach. It has seven lines, right? And in meditation, in the course on meditation, what we do is we learn how each month you meditate stronger on one line as you call out all the other sefirot. All those lines, if you'll notice, are Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, Malchut. All those lines are the Sefirot. Go to the right, the page on the right. Look on the page on the right, those circles. Same words. Got it? So the purpose of the Tzaddik is not to reveal the light. Look, why couldn't Rabbi Akiva, the greatest rabbi of his time, Rabbi Shimon, the architect of the Zohar, supposedly, with all the light and spirituality that they possessed, why couldn't they rid the Romans from the country? If they were so great, why didn't they get rid of the Romans, you know? I just got through telling you all they had to do was pray and they would go away, right? Why couldn't they just stop the destruction of the temple? So from a Kabbalistic point of view, sure, they could have done it, but they would not have allowed the nation to rid itself of bread of shame. There is this concept that we always have, you got to earn what you get. If you don't earn what you get, you will lose it as soon as you get it. And therefore, it was never yours. You know what people say, where was God when the Holocaust happened? I'm angry. Where was God? I'm angry at God because he let it happen. It's the same thing all over again. It's the same story. Of course, that's the wrong question. Where was God? What's the right question?
Where were you?
Yeah. Where was man? That's the real question. Okay. And after the tzaddik saw that the taf was pushed away because it had so many harsh judgments, and the shin was pushed away because negativity was grasping onto it, the sheker, the lie, and the kuf and the resh, those other two, she found the strength to believe that in reality it would be best that the world be created, not be created with me. For God, she is the signature of God like these do. She has the same signature as the shin and the taf. And even more than that, she doesn't have any connection to the other side. So the tzaddi has no connection to negativity. So when we write tzaddi, we write the tzaddi with a tzaddik dalet yud and without the kuf. But I can't make sense out of that without a blackboard, so don't worry about it. Basically, what they're saying is that even the way you write the tzaddi, you don't write it fully. You leave one of the letters out. And that which it said, the righteous people are signed by me, because what is the numerical value of tzaddi?
90.
The first four letters are malchut. The middle 10 letters are Zeir Anpin. From Aleph to Tet is Bina. Yud Tzadi Zeir Anpin. Don't tell. I'm not going to tell you this because you need. I need to show you this with the paper. Yeah. Is that wifey calling? Okay, let's leave it at this. I think that's enough for tonight on this letter. You got the message of the letter. And this ends lesson number 6 for the energy of the alphabet.